Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, October 8th, 2014, episode 10.19, the Week 6 preview show. I can't believe we're already on Week 6. My goodness. Adrian Peterson did not have his day in court. Roger Goodell says the NFL continues to work on the domestic violence issue as the league debuts a film for the education of domestic violence and sexual assault. Plus, the NFL is investigating an incident at Ford Field that involved a laser pointer. Dude, grow up. Greg Campbell joins me on Fans Take to talk about the Buffalo Bills as the NFL owners unanimously approve the sale of the Bills to the Pegulas. And with another 15 games on the schedule, Peter from Germany jumps in to represent the fans in Week 6. So let's get it going and chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. Oh, my goodness. I also forgot to say that Richard Sherman is added again. The Seattle Seahawks, after Monday night's beatdown of the Washington Redskins, said that Pierre Garçon didn't even matter in the league. I wonder what he has to say about Dez Bryant, who's coming to Seattle to face him this week. Before we get to that, I wanted to talk about and ask you all about movies. Where in the world are all the good movies right now? There's nothing. Usually I can see like a movie, at least one movie every 2 weeks. During the summer months when all the blockbusters are coming out, I go to like the movies once a week. Nothing right now. I haven't seen a movie in ages. Where are all the good movies? Instead, I'm stuck watching MLB playoffs, and both Southern California teams are out of it. The Angels got swept, and the Dodgers lost in four because their manager, Manley, couldn't pull his ace out of the game in the seventh inning in either the first or fourth games. Now, I get it. In the first game, you know, he gives up that solo home run in the first inning. They're down 1-0, but then they come back and they take the lead. And he pitches brilliantly for the next five innings. And then he gets to the seventh inning where he gives up back-to-back-to-back-to-back hits. And then before you know it, the Dodgers are down something like 10-3. Now, they made a game of it and eventually lost 10-9. But still, it was over because he didn't get him out of there. Kershaw was he was brilliant all year long, brilliant in the playoffs until he got to the seventh inning. What happened in game four? Same thing. Pitches six brilliant innings. Gets to the seventh inning because the manager says, we decided that he was going to face three batters. Oh, really? After he faced the first batter and gave up a hit, I would start to think, maybe I need to pull him. When he gives up the second hit, which was hit even harder than the first one, that's when I give him the hook. I'm sorry. I don't care that you're my ace. I'm not going to let you face another batter, because Mattingly did, and that batter went yard. Home run, three-run shot, 3-2 lead. See you later, Dodgers. And now that guarantees I won't watch baseball anymore this year, because I watch only to see the Angels win, and I only watch to see the Dodgers lose. And now that both are no longer going to happen, I will be watching no more. It's all about football now. So let's start with Adrian Peterson down in Texas. So reports came out that Adrian Peterson was going to have his day in court today and that he was going to enter a plea of not guilty. Well, it turns out he didn't even have to enter a plea. He went down because he was trying to get his trial going. He wants to get this moving. The faster he can go through the trial and get some closure to this, possibly he can get back to the football field. Well, not good news for Peterson, the Minnesota Vikings, and fantasy football owners that have Peterson stashed away on their benches somewhere, because a judge in Texas announced and tentatively set Peterson's trial date to face a felony charge of child abuse after using a wooden switch on his four-year-old son for December 1st. You got that, people? December 1st. The league ends regular season play 4 weeks later. So even if Adrian Peterson does get this trial going on December 1st. By the time the trial is completed, whether he's found guilty or not, I don't see Adrian Peterson playing football again this year, which is bad news for everybody. The other thing is that I don't even know if he is found not guilty, if the Minnesota Vikings even want him back in a Minnesota Viking uniform. So that being said, I don't see and I don't think it's going to be likely that we see Adrian Peterson playing football in Minnesota anytime soon. The hearing that was sent basically set today was just to pretty much assign this date. Peterson faces up to 2 years in prison and a $10,000 fine if convicted of injury to a child. He's stated all along he's not denied it. He stated he was trying to discipline his son, and he never intended to harm his son. He was just disciplining his son the way he was disciplined when he was growing up in Texas. I think, yeah, he tried to discipline his son, but he went too far. If you've seen some of the pictures of some of the marks on this kid, not good. Not good, Adrian. I just don't see how anybody in the state of Texas is going to find this guy guilty of anything, because I do know how, you know, I grew up in Texas. I'm a kid who grew up in tough part of the neighborhood. Now, fortunately for me, my dad and mom never went to hitting me with a stick or a broom or anything other than their hand. And I think the worst I ever got was my mom slapped me once. And that was probably because I was doing something pretty stupid. My dad never hit me. I'm the youngest of 10. And I think a couple of my older brothers got some pretty bad beatings. And one night, one of my older brothers came in drunk at the age of 17. That didn't go over too well with my dad, so he took a belt to him and beat up my brother pretty bad, to the point where he decided he wasn't hitting his kids anymore. So I never really got a beating. I didn't. But I got the look. I got the look from my dad, said, I can beat you. I'm just not going to. So I knew when I disappointed my dad, and I tried very hard not to do that. But that's it. That's it for Adrian Peterson. And like I said, it's not good news for him. With a trial date set for December 1st, I don't think he's on there. I am one of those fantasy football owners who have them stashed away. He was my number one pick in the big money league, and I've been keeping him on my bench just in case he does get to come back and play football. I don't think that's the case anymore. And even if this is done and it's after the season is over and – you know, Adrian Peterson is found not guilty, I don't know what team's going to want the distraction of Adrian Peterson. Obviously, he's a great football player, but not sure anybody's going to want to give him a job anytime soon. That being said, I think this is the last we hear of it until the court case actually goes live December 1st. We'll move on to an idiot in Detroit who used a laser pointer at the Bills-Lions game. Now, this is just pretty interesting. During the Buffalo Bills and Detroit Lion game this past weekend, the Bills winning 17-14 there at the end with a 58-yard boot by Dan Carpenter, someone in the crowd at Ford Field was using a laser pointer. You know, you've all seen these laser pointers where, you know, it's like a little, it looks like a pin, and it shoots a laser, and you can kind of see the red dot, or in this case, the green dot, far, far away, and you can shine it in people's eyes, and, you know, maybe when you were a kid, you shot it across the classroom at your friend who sat on the other side of the room to get his attention or whatever. That's what we're talking about here. Someone used it in the crowd to the point where they were doing it and putting it on football players while they were playing on the field. Kyle Orton, the quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, said that he saw the green thing. It was like in his face. And the holder, the kicker, Carpenter, said that when he was attempting a field goal, he saw the laser being shined on the holder, Colton Schmidt, while he was holding the ball. Now, some dude on Twitter claimed responsibility for using that pointer. laser pointer. And so the Buffalo Bills took it upon themselves to take some fans took screen grabs of those tweets, and they started a Facebook page calling for this person to be banned from all future NFL games. That was pretty cool because obviously the dude deleted the Twitter account. However, they did have the screen grabs, and now the NFL is looking into this person to see if they can, in fact, get him. I think Peter King from Sports Illustrated tweeted out a little bit ago that you know, that Kyle Orton had said that he had never been never seen a laser like that in a football game. To which someone replied to him that someone should laser him, laser Peter King. And Peter King always replies to mean people. And he said, that's not very nice. So it's not nice. And it's moronic for a grown man to go to a football game and use a laser pointer to point it at players while they're playing the game. I just think that's dumb. It's not even funny. It's funny if you're in a classroom. And you do it to your teacher, especially if it's a substitute teacher. Then it's funny. It's not funny when you're an adult, a grown man, and you take a laser pointer into a stadium. By the way, laser pointers are banned in all stadiums of, you know, baseball, MLB, NBA, NHL, and, of course, the NFL. Just don't do it, man. I don't know how you got it into the stadium. Lack security maybe there at Ford Field in Detroit. But it just wasn't funny. Grow up, dude, or seek treatment or something. Because if this wasn't a teenage kid or a sixth grader, you've got issues. So hopefully the NFL finds him and takes care of business and takes the appropriate action. This guy isn't allowed to come to NFL games ever again. Now, before I get to the games, and we actually are doing Fans Take, a segment with Greg, who is representing the Buffalo Bills, one more thing I want to talk about. The league obviously had its owners' meeting to begin this week, and Roger Goodell, commissioner of the league, continues to say that the NFL is working on the issue of domestic violence, and the league debuted this film. It's an educational film that they're going to show all players, all coaches, and employees of the NFL and NFL team staff regarding education of domestic violence and sexual assault. So I think it was pretty touching. I've not seen the full film. I've only seen parts of it. But I do want to play this kind of trailer that the league released to all teams.
I think this is an opportunity for every man to look inside himself. How do we redeem this moment? And if you're sitting like I am, boy, just catch your breath for a moment, relax your shoulders. And I'd ask you to just think about your breathing for a moment. Then think about the women in your life, the women that you love and care for, the women that have nurtured you, our mothers, our grandmothers, our wives, daughters, nieces. Take a moment and just think about them. Think about the love, the care that you have for them and them for you. And now just imagine that they're at a party and there's some man in there that starts to assault them, whether that is physically, sexually, verbally. They start to assault a woman that you love. Think how that makes you feel. Think about your feelings toward that perpetrator of that violence. And then I would ask you, as you think about that, think about the role that you have to raise up a generation of men that are going to have the clarity, have the moral courage to call out other men. What's a team? A team is nothing more than a set of relationships for a cause. But every team is built on the trust, the respect, the integrity, and the dignity of every team member. So if being a man is about relationships and commitment to a cause, and a team is a set of relationships for a cause, then it is an ideal place to help develop boys into men that are going to have integrity, that are going to be relationally successful in life, and understand they also have a responsibility to give back and to make a difference.
Well said. I think it's a very, very powerful opening, and I just think the NFL has to do more of this, and I think they will do more of it. And as they continue to do more of it, and they continue to show these educational videos to its players, its coaches, its staff, anybody else involved with the league, it's a positive step. So I applaud them for understanding finally. It took them long enough, but like as I've said before, better late than never, that there was a problem and they're going to start addressing it. And I like that they're not playing around anymore. You make a mistake, they're going to sit you down and you're going to have to answer for your mistakes before they let you continue to play in the league. That's a good thing. So if you want to go out to NFLEvolution.com. That is kind of like the back end for the NFL, that it puts a lot of its PR stuff, a lot of its public relations folks like Yellow and Brian, I forgot Brian's last name, the PR guys for the NFL, Greg Yellow. They do a lot of stuff there on, it's kind of like a, written like a blog. A lot of posts, a lot of announcements, of memos that kind of go out to NFL players and coaches. And that video is kind of up there, and that's where I got that audio from. Just check it out. It's pretty powerful, especially from the gentleman who is reciting that as a former NFL player, former guy who was in the league. So he knows what it's about. And I think that it's a good message. Because if we can have players in the spotlight, and not just in the NFL, I'm talking everywhere, NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, NASCAR, celebrities, you know, the celebrities have been doing this kind of like nomore.org commercials that have been played during football games, because the NFL has been giving nomore.org free spots to air during football games, which is really cool. Just the more vocal we can get about how this is not acceptable, I think is a good thing. So good step, positive step in the right direction there for the NFL, and I hope they continue and not just drop it a year after things kind of settle down. Let's bring in Fan for Fans take. Okay, joining me right now on Fans Take, Greg Campbell, back to talk about the Buffalo Bills, who were sneaky and got that win over the Detroit Lions in Detroit last week. What's up, Greg?
Very sneaky. Hey, Steven. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back. I appreciate it. Yeah, sneaky, sneaky there. They were down 14-0, and the next thing I know, I look up, it's a tie ball game, and they actually – dude, who knew that guy could kick a 58-yard field goal?
That was pretty incredible, actually. I think that it kind of gets overlooked, strangely. It was the contrast between Dan Carpenter, who has been pretty incredible since he came here last year from the Dolphins, and I don't even know the other guy's name, the other kicker.
Alex Henry.
Lions.
Yeah, he got cut.
Yeah.
So you don't have to know his name.
No, he's gone, obviously. That was pretty amazing. So then I think it just was – somehow it got overlooked, I think, with how great the defense played and just the, you know, the comeback on the road and holding the Lions the way they did to 7 offensive points. And he kicked a 58-yarder to win it.
That's right.
With nearly no time left. That's great.
It took a 58, almost darn near 60-yard field goal to win the game. I do feel bad a little bit for Alex Henry, because he had plenty of times to put this game on ice. A long time ago, he missed 3 field goals. Now, if I remember correctly, the field goals, a couple of them, one was like a 40-yarder. I think the other two were 49 and 52 yards.
44, like 47, and 50.
Yeah,
those were the ones 50, he missed. Yeah, they weren't gimmies, but come on, an NFL
you
got to
make a 44-yarder. I'm sorry. That's a given.
Yep.
And obviously when your guy for Buffalo boots a 58-yarder, you're like, dude, if you would have just made the two 40-yarders, you would have been all right.
Yeah, he Carpenter was ticked off that he hit the upright on a 50-yard try.
Yeah.
So he wasn't focusing on the 58-yarder for the win. He was like, I missed that one.
Yeah, I missed the 50-yarder. Anyways, the Detroit Lions, I think, get the better end of the kicking bargain as they cut Alex Henry, and then they picked up Matt Prater, who was let go
by the
Denver Broncos. So I think their kicking woes are over. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, should be.
All right, so the Buffalo Bills, now here they are. If you look at this, they're 3-2, right? They're sitting on top of the division, tied with the New England Patriots. And guess who's coming to town? The New England Patriots.
Yeah. It couldn't be better.
I think
it's a perfect setup.
You and I, we kind of went back and forth there for a little bit. I think I fired you up a little bit, right?
You had me typing emails in all caps. That's how fired up I was.
Oh, yes, the classic email in all caps. That's awesome. So what has changed? Okay, before we get to that game, the owners meeting was this week, and the owners have unanimously approved the sale of the Bills to the Pegulas. So what does that mean for the Buffalo Bills? Does that mean that it's a done deal and now the Pegulas – are now in charge, or when do they take over?
Yeah, Terry Pegula, in a very brief press conference today, said technically there's still one more thing that has to happen, and that's the actual transaction of money.
Oh, yeah, so give me the $1.8 billion?
Right. He said the wire transfer has to happen and whatever, all that. That part has not happened, but today, the Pegulas were unanimously approved by the other NFL owners as the new owners of the Bills. And I forget, I think it was last week, the finance committee said, yeah, everything was good, looks good. So what has been known since about a month ago? Well, actually, it was the home opener for the Bills against the Dolphins is when that was first announced, that the Pegulas were selected to be the owners. So really, everybody in Buffalo has been on cloud nine, super excited since that was announced, because the Pegulas they own the Sabres, the Buffalo Sabres, the hockey team here, and his wife is from a town near me, actually in Rochester area, and they have the local connection, and they're Buffalo sports fans, and even their daughters are, and it's a Buffalo sports family that now owns the Sabres and the Bills, and they're building this fantastic hockey plex in right on the Harbor Center, they call it, in downtown Buffalo on Lake Erie there in the lakefront. And they're just they're pretty much the king and queen of Buffalo and all of Western New York right now. Everybody's very excited and happy to welcome the Pegulas as the second owners of the Buffalo Bills.
Well, then I need to send him a quick email and say, before you make that $1.6 billion transaction, or I'm sorry, $1.4 billion transaction.
1.4, yeah.
Can you please send me $100,000?
That's what I think.
Just to fund the podcast for the next couple of years. If you would fund my podcast for the next couple of years, I would greatly appreciate it. We'll talk about the Buffalo Bills for the rest of the
That'd be great. Pretty amazing. $1.4 billion. He's just plopping down that cash. He made out today. He got the great deal because he owns the Bills.
That's
so
true.
They're real happy with it, too.
He does.
They're very excited.
The Buffalo Bills. He also owns the Buffalo Sabres. Now, here come the dreaded New England Patriots, the team that has pretty much owned the AFC East for the recent history. So what does Buffalo have to do? They're at home. They're 3-point dogs, and I always say fear the home dog.
Mm-hmm.
But what do they got to do to beat the New England Patriots in this game?
Well, one thing they did last week against the Lions, who are a really good offense, and granted, they lost Johnson. He played the first half, but he only
on
had,
one leg, mind you. He played the first half on one
two
leg.
Two catches. Yeah.
One catch.
And their rookie running back was doing pretty well. And Stafford, he looked fine. He was getting the ball to Tate. But what the Bills have, even with Kyle Williams out last week, who is supposed to maybe play this week, he's been practicing again, they have the front 4 that can just generate lots of pressure. And if you remember Cameron Wake in week 1 against the Patriots, just, was it 2 sacks and fumbles that he had Brady? And he just, you know, that strong defensive front can really...
That is certainly how the Patriots
offensive line looked pretty good against the Bengals, right?
Yeah.
They ran well, and that was impressive because the Bengals are a good defense. But didn't it look like the Patriots were just mad? They came out with all the emotional energy in that game. And, you know, that's not to say that won't happen this week, but I think the Bills with the official announcement of the Pegulas, which will be celebrated at the stadium this weekend, with that big road win, really, where they held a good offense to just 7 points on the road, even if they had injuries, so did the Bills. We were missing the Kyle Williams, who's probably our best defensive player, and Nigel Bradham, who's, you know, with Kiko Alonso out too, the Bills are, you'd think they're thin at linebacker, but their front seven is just doing great this year. They lead the league in sacks. They have... They're second in rushing defense. They haven't allowed any rushing touchdowns, actually. So, it's, again, pretty impressive. And I think that defense with the crowd energy and even the internal energy that the Bills have, they were hitting hard in that game against Detroit on the road.
What kind of celebration are they going to throw for the Pegulas? They're not going to bring a whole bunch of hockey players out to celebrate, right?
No hockey. It's all about football. You know, I bet they're still going to honor the Wilsons in some way. That was one little fun part of the game last weekend. Ralph Wilson is from Detroit, and he has always lived there. And so the final game the Bills played under the ownership of the Wilson family was in Detroit. And to win it in that way, great defensive game, and, you know, they hung in there when they weren't supposed to win, and they stole the game at the end there. It was just a neat way to end the Wilson era. So I think that'll probably happen. And then with the Pegulas this weekend, they haven't announced anything in particular, but the Russ Brandon is the guy who sort of runs the Bills marketing, and right. He's been hinting at big plans for this weekend to ring in the new era of the Buffalo Bills.
And Terry Pegula's not going to come in there and make a whole bunch of changes, right? Is he going to keep the majority of the staff in place?
It seems like that. I mean, no, he hasn't said anything, honestly. And he's even said that he's not going to say anything until it's officially official. Like, today was the first time he said anything,
right.
And that was very brief, just a couple minutes press conference. I think once the transaction is complete, I'm sure he'll do a press conference and talk about that. When he took ownership of the Sabres, it was definitely a different situation. But he did bring in a guy to president of the Sabres, Ted Black, to run everything. And a little bit later on, he brought in some former Sabres to help run the Sabres organization. But
so,
I think this with the Bills, it's just going to they're going to let this season play out and see what they can do. Kyle Orton is now the quarterback, and the Bills are back on the winning track.
Are you sold on that already? I mean, are you sold on Kyle Orton? He's the guy?
No, but what I think it shows is that Manuel is just young. I mean, he's missing open receivers. Now, I don't mean throwing in badly. I mean, he's not seeing them. And, you know, he gets nervous, and he holds the ball a little bit too long. And so what Orton does is he's seen it all, right? He's been there. He can get it done. He's basically like Ryan Fitzpatrick for the Buffalo Bills. He can get it done. I think Orton makes a few less mistakes than Fitzpatrick. And he had the first 300-yard passing game for the Bills since I don't even know when. I don't even know if Fitzpatrick had one. He probably did. But it's been a long time, and it was nice to see efficiency and taking chances and couple nice long passes down the field. I think Orton is definitely sufficient because the rest of the team is so ready to win.
All right. Well, then give me your prediction because I think you said earlier you're going to make the Bills one of your survivor picks. Are you still sticking with
Thanks for saying that on your show here. Now I have to do it. Hey, I was going to do it anyway.
I won't hold you to it. Trust me, I won't. Because I think I think it's a little crazy myself. But you know, I'm not going to hold you to it.
Well, here's what I think. I think, and honestly, I picked the Lions to beat the Bills last week because I thought they had everything in their favor with some injuries that we had and traveling on the road, a new quarterback, having not played since last year at all, really.
Yeah, exactly.
But everything came together, and that I'm telling you, that defense is the real deal. So I think the Bills, with everything in their favor this week, other than the Patriots looked like they were kind of back on track last week, and honestly, I think that makes it better because the Patriots aren't a horrible team. They're going to come into the Ralph, and the Bills will, I think, overwhelm them and end up with a pretty, you know, 10-point or more victory this weekend. So
convincing.
I'm sticking with that. It's my survivor pick. It's already locked in.
Wow, he's locking it in as the survivor pick. That is impressive. That's the way to believe. You know what? I will throw some props towards Sammy Watkins, the rookie wide receiver. I didn't think.
Yeah, oh my goodness, he was amazing.
I didn't think that he would that he would be this effective this quickly. And that catch at the end of the game to set up the field goal, the game-winning field goal, where he basically volleyballed it to himself, was freaking ridiculous, man. That catch.
It wasn't It wasn't a great pass. It was definitely behind him, but he reached back, tipped it to himself, caught it, and it was at a perfect, you know, a crucial time of the game. So,
yeah,
he seems to be something special, and they've said that ever since he got here. So, looks like he is.
So, prediction by Greg, 10-point victory for the Bills over the Patriots. I will believe it when I see it, my friend. I'm still not I'm still not sold. It's going to take a 10-plus point victory over the Patriots for me to jump on the Bills bandwagon.
Marcell Dareus was very impressive last week. He got, I think he had just 2 sacks, I'm not sure, but just pressure like crazy. He was pushing the line back with 2 guys on him. He was double-teamed. He's pushing the line back to Stafford. And I really think, especially if Williams is back this week, all those guys, and Mario Williams and Jerry Hughes and the pressure that we're going to likely put on Brady this week is really going to be what will make the difference.
Well,
and hopefully the offense will be, you know, they'll put up some points too.
If they can get to Brady and cause that I've always said Brady does not like to get hit. And when he starts getting hit and if he gets hit early, that changes the whole dynamic of the game for the Patriots. So good luck to you. Good luck to the Buffalo Bills. We'll see how it goes. I unfortunately am getting ready to divulge my picks. I'm not sure I went that way. We'll see. We'll see.
Well, I know that. And it's all right. The Bills have to earn that. So you'll see. This would be a great step in that direction for sure. If they can win this game against the 3-2 Patriots, they take a pretty good hold on the division, having a 2-0 record in the division.
Yeah, I mean, they'll have tiebreakers over Miami and New England, and they'll have the best record in the division. So, certainly a big game.
If you look ahead at the AFC, and I don't know if you want to talk about this on your show today, but if you look at the AFC East and their schedules, both New England and Miami have pretty tough schedules, actually. So even almost by default, the Bills have a pretty good chance at, if they can play solid defense and not mistake-free football and play mistake-free football, then they really have a good chance at the division this year. So that's my other prediction.
Greg Campbell jumping here and representing the Buffalo Bills on FanStake.
You know it.
Appreciate you coming on, buddy. Thank you very much. And
thanks a lot, Steven.
Good luck to you guys this week.
Thank you very much. Go Bills.
I like how every time Greg leaves the show, he has to throw Go Bills in there. That's awesome. I love it. Anyways, 15 games to talk about, all broken up again. Time to move on and get all of those picks in because we are running out of time. I don't know. I'm here by myself, and I still managed to go over an hour. I don't know how I do that. I'm sorry, but let's get started with El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana. That's right. We'll talk about those Buffalo Bills putting them in the biggest game of the week. The New England Patriots travel to Buffalo to face the Bills in what is going to be the early lead in the AFC East. Buffalo at 3-2, New England at 3-2, Miami at 2-2, chasing them. It's all tight there in the AFC East. This is a big game for both teams. New England bouncing back last week after getting crushed the week before at Kansas City. Last week they looked really good. They started to use the double tight ends again. Gronkowski and Tim Wright playing some good football there. But the Buffalo Bills, with Kyle Orton now at quarterback, are going to be hosting the New England Patriots. And as before, as Greg said, now with the sale of the Buffalo Bills to the Pegulas kind of being pretty much finalized, unanimously approved by all the teams, Buffalo's going to be excited. They're going to be jumping. They're going to be hopping. Unfortunately, I like the New England Patriots to win this game. When New England plays like they did last week, and they have the whole mentality that nobody gives us a chance, nobody thinks we can win, nobody likes us, wah, 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 and they kind of do the little whiny woe is me thing, it works for them. And they come out and they play like they did against the Cincinnati Bengals. They come out with a lot of passion. Belichick probably gives a great speech, and they come out and they play football. And I think Belichick's going to come back this week again. He's going to give them another one of those, nobody's giving you a chance. Nobody thinks that you can beat Buffalo. Everybody's burying you. They don't think you're going to win this division. And they're going to find a way to go into Buffalo and beat the Buffalo Bills again. Even if they fall down late, I think they come back to early. They'll find a way to come back and win. Buffalo has a mental block, I think, with New England. Even when they take leads against the Patriots, they always seem to squander them. And they can't really cover the tight end all that well. That's why I gave Greg such a hard time. I think the injuries to the Detroit Lions last week kind of really hurt them on the offensive side of the ball. But if they do get after Tom Brady and they hit him, there is no reason why the Buffalo Bills can't beat the New England Patriots. But they have to hit Brady, and they have to hit him hard. Now, our fan this week for week six is Peter. I cannot say his last name because I really don't want to bury it and do a hatchet job with his last name. So I'm just going to call him Peter from Germany. Peter is taking the Buffalo Bills in this one. The Bills are favored by 3 points. That's pretty impressive. But you're getting the 3 points for, you know, home field advantage, I guess. The over-under is 44. I actually like the over. I think there's going to be a lot of points, and I think that's how New England wins this game. They're going to have to score 30, 35 points in this game, put pressure on Buffalo. I think Buffalo will be able to score some points. I'm still looking at like 35-27, right around in there. I think it's going to be high scoring. I think it goes over 44. And I actually like the New England Patriots to win by a touchdown. So there you go. You heard what Greg said earlier, and I know he knows his Buffalo Bills very, very well. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this game plays out. Peter from Germany likes the Buffalo Bills as well. He says, I can't give you any good reason why I picked Buffalo here. I guess it's what you call a gut pick. And when in doubt, I mostly go with the home team. So he's in doubt, and he's taking the home team of Buffalo. I am not in doubt. I got the Patriots. Move on from El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana to Games of the Week. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Games of the Week. And in these 6 Games of the Week, nobody has a losing record. That's why these games are big games. They're crucial games early in the season where they're statement games, really. The winner of these games are going to make a statement that, hey, we're for real. You got to take us seriously from here on out. So here they are. We'll start with Thursday Night Football as the Houston Texans host the Indianapolis Colts. Right off the bat, Peter from Germany and myself are at odds again. He likes Houston. He says, all numbers say the Colts are a better team, but I like the Texans at home a little better than I like the Colts on the road. And that is his reason for taking the Houston Texans. Houston's are dogs by 3 points. And so far, both of these games, he is taking the home dog. That's pretty smart. But I like the Indianapolis Colts. If the Dallas Cowboys can kind of keep the Houston offense at bay like they did last week, I expect the Indianapolis Colts to be able to do the same thing. And they've got Andrew Luck, who's one of the hottest quarterbacks in football right now. He's throwing the ball around very well. I like Indianapolis to go into Houston and take a one-game lead in the AFC South. The Colts are just doing it right now, playing pretty good football. They stymied Baltimore last week. Ravens, I think, only scored 13 points. Indy's playing good now. They're playing good on offense and defense. After an 0-2 start, they've managed to win three in a row. They're at 3-2, looking to improve to 4-2 and drop Houston to 3-3. So it's Thursday night football. This game is tomorrow if you're listening on Wednesday. It's tonight if you're listening on Thursday. And it was yesterday if you waited till Friday to download the podcast. Why are you waiting so long? All right, there you go. I like Indy. I like Reggie Wayne in this game big, though. I think that Dez Bryant showed you can get after those guys in the secondary in Houston, and I think Reggie Wayne will have a big game, take Indianapolis on the road. Next game of the week, the Dallas Cowboys travel to Seattle to face the Seahawks. This is the biggest spread of the week. The Seattle Seahawks are favored by 9.5. Why are they favored by 9.5? Because nobody goes into Seattle and wins. I mean, it is the toughest place to play right now. I know that Kansas City recently did their, Guinness Book of World Records, shout at the top of your lungs, do so many decibels that blood was literally coming out of people's ears. But when it comes to knowing exactly when to get loud and when to be quiet, I don't think anybody does it better than the Seattle Seahawks fans. They do a good job. I think I would like to take the Dallas Cowboys. Hey, I would like to say Dallas is, look at them. They're 4-1. Nobody thought the Cowboys would be. There were some people who predicted that the Cowboys wouldn't win four games all year. Here they are at 4-1. I would like to say they could go up to Seattle and win. There's a chance, and I'm going to be cheering for them. So I think that they could go up there and beat Seattle if they take the style of approach that the San Diego Chargers did, and they pound the ball with DeMarco Murray, and they just run it and run it and run it and keep Russell Wilson and that offense of Marshawn Lynch and Percy Harvin off the field, and they just slow down the game, elongate the game by just not passing as much, running the football, and if they can run successfully, then they have a shot. They will have a shot, but if they think that they're going to go into Seattle and get into a shootout and Romo's going to throw it around for 35, 40 times, I'm not sure that's going to spell success for the Dallas Cowboys. I'm going to take Seattle because I just can't take Dallas giving 9.5 points. I'm going to put money on Dallas because I think they're not going to win. They're not going to lose by double digits. I don't think Seattle beats them by 10. I think it will be a close game. It'll be a low-scoring game. I will take the under in the game because the game is 47.5 points is the over-under. I don't think it's that high. I think we're looking at a 2014, 21-17 ball game. It'll be close. It'll be low-scoring, and that's what I'll do. I'll take the under in this football game. I may also put something on Dallas. If they're going to give me 10 points, please, I will take it. I don't think the Cowboys are that bad that they'll lose by double digits. And yes, folks, for those of you who have been listening for a very long time, first of all, thank you for continuing to listen to the show. And yes, folks, I am going against the Dallas Cowboys on the show. I'm going against the Dallas Cowboys in my picks. By the way, at 52, 68.2% picks correct so far. I am leading in our pick'em game. If you go to NFLRNR.com/pick'em, you can pick against me. There is one other person that is tied with me at 52, but other than that person, I am leading everybody there. 68.2% correct picks that I have made on ESPN site. I think I'm chasing 7 games, and on foxsports.com, I'm chasing 5 games. So I've got a shot there. I keep picking like I'm picking right now. I feel like I'm in tune with my picks. If I keep picking this well, I may have a shot there at the end of the season. All right, and that's why, because I do have a shot and I want my picks to be good, I will take the Seattle Seahawks. And, of course, wouldn't you know it, this is the time where I pick against Dallas, and they'll go into Seattle and win the football game. But I won't feel that bad. All right, the Green Bay Packers travel to Miami to face the Miami Dolphins. Miami at 2-2. Green Bay is sitting at 3-2. I believe that is correct. Green Bay is favored in this game by 3.5 points. Another home dog. There's a ton of home dogs, and it kind of scares me with some of these picks because I'm taking the road teams. I'm taking the Green Bay Packers in this game. Peter from Germany has got the Miami Dolphins. He says, coming off their bye week and being at home, I like the Dolphins in this one. If Miami's defense brings their best game, they have a chance against Aaron Rodgers. I just don't think that Miami's defense is capable of shutting down all the weapons Aaron Rodgers has. And if Eddie Lacy runs at even a shade of how he ran last week, it's going to be tough for Miami to win this football game. I still like Miami. I still think there's other games that Miami will win to kind of compete for that division later on in the season. But this is one that they just won't find a way to win. I like Green Bay, and I think Green Bay wins easily. The New York Giants travel to Philadelphia to face the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles at home are 2.5-point favorites. Giants coming off a pretty good comeback win. They were losing 20-10 to the Atlanta Falcons. Came back and scored 20 unanswered in the second half to win that game 30-20. Philadelphia is probably the ugliest 4-1 team there is in the league. They are 4-1, so you got to give it to them that they won four games. But their offense just has a lot of question marks. LeSean McCoy has disappeared. He is not performing how everybody expected him to perform. Nick Foles has been a shade of the guy who threw for 29 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions last year. That TD to INT ratio has come down significantly. So I don't know what to expect. I know that they're division rivals. I know they hate each other. I know they're already talking smack to one another. The Philadelphia Eagles saying that the Giants are living in the past and using their past glory. And the Giants say the Philadelphia Eagles just don't know. So this rivalry may be heating up again. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to give the nod to the Philadelphia Eagles because they're at home. And I think at some point in the season, maybe it's this game. Maybe all the smack talk that the Giants are doing. I think I saw a picture of Prince Amukamura and I think it was Wilson, maybe the other corner, who were took a picture with a guy who was wearing a Philadelphia Eagles jersey, except it wasn't to honor the Philadelphia Eagles. He was making fun of them. He turned his back to the photo, and in the back, the name, instead of a name, it said Super Bowls, and then the number he was wearing was 0. And both the Giants players were holding up big donut zeros with their hands. So they're definitely trash talking. They're going at each other. NFC East right now back in full swing. Dallas and Philadelphia at 4-1. The Giants right behind them at 3-2. And after a horrible, horrible 0-2 start, and people were willing to bury the New York Giants, they've won 3 in a row. This is going to be a really good game. One of the games that I'll certainly have on my tele. But both Peter and I have the Philadelphia Eagles. Next game of the week, the Pittsburgh Steelers travel to Cleveland to face the Browns. And lo and behold, people, Cleveland is favored by 2 points. The Browns are 2-point favorite. I cannot believe it. I still can't believe my eyes. Let me wipe my eyes. Let me take my glasses. Hold on 1 second. It's true. They're favored by 2. The over-under is 47. Man, I'm going to take the under. Well, I don't know. Last time these two, week one, it was 30-27, right? That's 57 points. Whoo, doggy. That's a lot of points for these two teams. I'm taking the Pittsburgh Steelers. I still don't buy the Cleveland Browns. I'm not buying any stock on them just yet. They've had to play these kind of like cardiac kids, come from behind. They were down 25 points last week, came back to win. I think largest road victory by any team in the NFL come from behind by that many points. And I tip my hat to the Cleveland Browns. I just don't buy them. If you can't put together 4 complete quarters and play 60 full minutes of football where you look great in all 60 minutes, I don't buy it. Because if you go down again to the Pittsburgh Steelers, you're not coming back. The Pittsburgh Steelers defense is not the Tennessee Titans defense. You're not going to score 16 points in the fourth quarter on the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'm going to take Pittsburgh. Peter from Germany also has the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so we're taking road dog there. That's going to be very interesting to see how that game plays out. Because If the Cleveland Browns win, they're right in there, man. They're right in the battle for the AFC North. So Cleveland, the Browns know that they can get a win here. People are going to start talking about them. I just don't see it happening. The final game of the week, the Carolina Panthers travel to Cincinnati to face the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals got embarrassed last week by the New England Patriots. However, they're 7-point favorites. That is a big number, especially going against Cam Newton. However, it's Cam Newton, and Cam Newton's been struggling. Cincinnati is going to come out pissed that they let Tom Brady treat him like, I was going to say something bad, but I'm glad I caught myself. Cincinnati just got tore up by Tom Brady last week. They're going to be a little upset at that. I don't think Cam Newton has the weapons at his disposal to be able to do that. I don't think Cincinnati wins by 7. I'm not touching that line at all. I do, however, like the over in this one. The over-under is 43.5. I think it goes over because I think it's going to be something like 27-20. That'll be just enough to get over that 43.5. I like Cincinnati in this game to beat Carolina and the Panthers. So does Peter, so we agree again. There's only two more games that we're going to disagree, and unfortunately, it's in the nap games. So we'll have to wait to see about those because right now, it's games of importance. The first game of importance puts the Denver Broncos traveling across the country to face the New York Jets. This is the second highest line of the week as Denver is favored by 9 points. That makes the Jets a 9-point home dog. Now, I know people say fear the home dog, but right now, nobody fears the New York Jets, and you shouldn't fear the New York Jets as long as Geno Smith is their quarterback. I don't know what Rex Ryan is doing, but Rex Ryan has said Geno Smith is his guy, and if he throws Geno Smith out there against the Denver Broncos, they're going to get killed. This is the only double-digit spread where I am going to take the favorite. I think Denver covers. I think they win by 20. New York Jets looked awful last week against the San Diego Chargers. They're going to look just as awful against Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. I like Denver to win big. The over-under in that game is 46.5. I think it's now 47.5. That's a pretty big number, but the Denver Broncos might put that up themselves. I like Peyton Manning in this one big. He's going to definitely, there's a quote that just came out by Rex Ryan. He said, they have a great offensive coordinator. It just so happens their offensive coordinator is the quarterback. He's talking about Peyton Manning. And it's kind of true, semi-true statement there. Jets are bad. Last week, it turns out, they went to Michael Vick, and I think Michael Vick made a comment this week about how he wasn't ready. He wasn't prepared. Because he wasn't taking his reps as seriously as he needed to. And that won't happen again. Come on, Mike. No wonder you're a backup to freaking Geno Smith. Get in there and fight for the freaking job and take it. You're much better than that. But when you have a quarterback who misses team meeting, and then you have a backup who doesn't take his reps and practice seriously, you got two quarterbacks that aren't very good. And that's why the New York Jets are stinking up the place. Both Peter from Germany and I have Denver. We agree, and I think it's going to be Denver in a blowout. We'll move on. People are saying, why is this even a game of importance? I'll tell you why. Because the Jets have to show something. If the Jets don't show anything in this game, I don't know how much longer Rex Ryan survives. I think the Jets are a classy organization. They're going to let Ryan ride out the year. If they get blown out of this one, though, they might consider letting Rex go. There you go. Chicago at Atlanta. The Bears at 2-3. Atlanta at 2-3. The loser of this game might as well kiss their season goodbye. And Atlanta and Chicago both had leads last week. Atlanta had a huge lead against the Giants. Chicago had a huge lead against the Carolina Panthers. And they both wound up losing. That's not acceptable. Atlanta's at home. Chicago's on the road. Jay Cutler, the turnover machine, has reared his ugly head. I'm taking Atlanta. Peter from Germany agrees with me on that one. Atlanta Falcons bounce back on the win and get back into the race in the NFC South, which, by the way, 8-8, 9-7 might win that division. So Atlanta needs to jump back in there with a win if they're going to compete in this division. The Washington Redskins traveled to Arizona to play the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona obviously got embarrassed last week by the Denver Broncos, but who isn't getting embarrassed by the Denver Broncos? The Washington Redskins put up a semi kind of a fight against the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks last week, but they ultimately lost. Now they're coming on the road on a short week against Arizona, who has a pretty good defense. I've got the Arizona Cardinals. Peter from Germany has Arizona as well. Now, the only thing that might make me change this pick is we don't know if Dree Stanton is going to be a go for Arizona. The Arizona Cardinals obviously are not going to have Carson Palmer back. He is not practiced. The second string quarterback, which is Dree Stanton, kind of got hurt last week. And we're not sure if he's going to play the game, which means that if he doesn't play in the game, the Arizona Cardinals are going to have to go to their third string quarterback. And Paulson, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to take Arizona if I have to rely on Logan Thomas, the third string quarterback out of Virginia Tech. Now, he looked kind of okay. It's rookie QB, but if he gets the start, then I will change over to the Washington Redskins. I don't think Logan Thomas will have enough to beat the Redskins. So watch out. If you're not following on Facebook and Twitter, you should, because that's where I make my official pick changes. On ESPN's website and a couple other websites where I do some stuff, I have till about an hour before the game start to make changes. So usually by 8:30 a.m. Pacific time, if I make a change, an official pick change, that's where I make it. And it usually happens shortly after inactives are turned in by most teams, which are due 90 minutes, I believe, before the game starts. You have to list who your inactives are. So if I hear that Dree Stanton is inactive and they're going to go with Logan Thomas, I will change that to the Washington Redskins. Arizona is still favored by 3.5 right now, but it is off the board at most places. The other thing, Arizona, I believe, signed Dennis Dixon this week since they're still kind of struggling at the quarterback position. So we'll have to keep that in mind. It's Washington. It's a short week. I really don't know, but for now, let's both put Arizona. We both got Arizona. I will make an official pick change if Logan Thomas gets the start for Arizona. The final game of importance, the San Francisco 49ers travel to St. Louis to face the Rams. And I hear everybody again saying, Steven, the Rams are 1-3, man. How in the world is this a game of importance? Well, it's a game of importance for the San Francisco 49ers. They're still going through the turmoil of everyone saying, yeah, Harbaugh, man, nobody likes him. And they're playing for his coach right now. They're playing pretty hard. And the other thing is, the St. Louis Rams have had the San Francisco 49ers number over the last several seasons. So Austin Davis is playing pretty good. Do you know that Austin Davis, since he's taken over as a starting quarterback for the St. Louis Rams, is averaging over 300 yards per game? I think he's averaging like 312 yards passing per game. Now, the San Francisco 49ers have yet to allow a 300-yard passer, so something has to give in this game. I've got the San Francisco 49ers. Peter has San Francisco as well. The St. Louis Rams are 3.5-point dogs at home, another home dog that you have to fear. And if Austin Davis can play some good football and the defense plays as well against Colin Kaepernick as they've played in the past, I think St. Louis might sneak out a victory. I'm not going to take it alive, but I see the possibilities there. But for now, we've got San Francisco, and we'll put it in the books. And that's it for Games of Importance. Here comes Games of Interest. All right. Only two games of interest, only four more games to talk about. We'll talk about these really quickly, and then we'll hit the nap games where I'll give you my picks and I'll bail out of here. We'll start with the Baltimore Ravens traveling to Tampa Bay to face the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay is a three-point dog, mostly because they're at home. There's no way Tampa Bay is going to beat Baltimore. I have no idea why this spread is so low. I am taking Baltimore. I'm taking them to win. I'm taking them to cover that spread because I think they're going to win by a touchdown or more. Tampa Bay offensively just doesn't have it. They get hot too late in games, and I know that they got hot last week against the New Orleans Saints, but people, that was the New Orleans Saints, one of the worst defenses in the league. Baltimore, for all its, you know, turnover on defense, they're playing pretty good football. There's no way that Glennon or whatever the dude's name is over there for the Buccaneers is going to hold Baltimore's defense and play good football early. And even if he gets hot late, I don't think they come back to win a game. Baltimore steaming over, letting one get away against Indianapolis last week. I'll take the Ravens, and so does Peter from Germany. We both have Baltimore. The final game of interest, we have the San Diego Chargers at Oakland Raiders. The Chargers are favored by 7.5 points. And I once again will hear, Steven, why is this a game of interest? It's Oakland, man. They haven't won a game. But over the last couple of years, Oakland has found a way to beat San Diego, even when they've had some pretty bad teams. Here come the Chargers. They're riding pretty high right now. They only have one loss. They're looking pretty good. They know that they have, you know, a nice lead right now in the AFC West. They're sitting at 4-1. The Denver Broncos at 3-1 are chasing them. They got to keep winning because eventually they're going to play Denver, and I'm not sure they're ready to beat the Denver Broncos yet. San Diego's playing good football. They need to continue it. I think they take Oakland. I'm telling you right now that I like it so much that I'm actually making it one of my survivor picks, going against something that I normally don't do. I normally do not take a road team, but I'm taking a road team this time. I like San Diego to take care of Oakland with no problems. Peter as well takes the Chargers, and that does it for games of interest. Two nap games right now. All right, the first nap game, the Tennessee Titans are favored by 6 points at home over the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jacksonville Jaguars, you know what, I'm putting them on 0-16 watch. It's not looking good for them. Tennessee played some pretty good ball. Even if Charlie Whitehurst has to start at quarterback, I like them. Now, here's one that we differ on. Peter from Germany has taken Jacksonville, and he says if the Jaguars want to win a game at all this season, this is the one, or in week 16 when they play the Tennessee Titans again. So I pick them this week, and no matter if they win or lose, I probably will never pick them again. So he's taking Jacksonville. I'm sorry. If they're going to win a game, they're going to win. They'll beat Tennessee maybe at home, but they're not going to beat Tennessee on the road. I've got Tennessee. He's got Jacksonville. Final nap game, the Detroit Meow Kitty Cats. Yes, I have turned them back to the Kitty Cats. Even though they're sitting there at 3-2, they're going on the road to face the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings at 2-3, still very much alive in the division, only one game back of Green Bay and Detroit. I'm taking Minnesota. Why? Because they're getting Teddy Bridgewater back. Now they're going to have an offense. Now he's going to be able to move around, do some stuff with his feet, throw some solid passes, because Christian Ponder was awful last week. I like Minnesota, but our friend from Germany, Peter, is taking Detroit. He says, at the time I'm writing this, 2/3 of the fans in the Pick'em game are choosing Detroit to win. And since most of the fans are with me on this, I'm making this the challenge game. So there you go. He's making a nap game the challenge game. I don't even know why this is a nap game. What the heck am I doing? This is at the very least a game of interest. I mean, you've got a winning record with a non-winning record. Minnesota's getting Teddy Bridgewater back. What am I doing? I've never done this before. I've never upgraded a game midstream ever. And I'm doing it now. I'm going to take this and I'm going to take it out of nap game status and making it a game of importance, because frankly, it is very important to both teams. Minnesota wants to stay alive in the North. They have to win, and Detroit has to bounce back and get a victory. However, no Calvin Johnson, and the injuries keep mounting. I'm going to stick with Minnesota, and I got to stick with them now because it's the challenge game. As Peter has chomped it in, he's going with 2/3 of the people are taking Detroit in this one. Look, Minnesota's this is Trisha's special upset special. Minnesota's not even favored. Well, no, that's not Trisha's special. I'm sorry. This is a Minnesota favorite by dogs by 2. They're 2-point dogs. So it's going to be interesting to see how Minnesota responds to Teddy Bridgewater coming back. All I know is that with Teddy on the field, Minnesota looked like a different football team. He's back. He's playing this week. I like Minnesota, and I'll certainly hope that I am right, because it's the challenge game, and I currently have a 3-2 lead. That's all the time. I'm sorry that I went overboard, but you know what? We had a great guest. Thank you, Greg, for coming on the show. Very nice little piece there by the NFL, getting serious about some serious issues. That's all the time we have, and I'm Steven Miranda. You've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.